Hello and welcome to the Untitled Car Show. I'm your host, Ike. I am still out in the garage working on the Fiero. Just kind of going over some bits and pieces here. We're going to talk a little bit about what happened with the Volvo, because I've had a few people ask me, you know, what happened? Why did it go away? I don't understand. I love the Volvo. Why did it go away? I love that car. Why didn't you sell it to me? Stuff like that. So what it comes down to is I was spending a lot of time, like this is the TLDR version of this. So if you want to just get the 5-minute answer and get the hell out, this is the version for you. I'm spending a lot of time and a lot of effort and a lot of my sanity on a car that was constantly one step forward, two steps back. So for my first big automotive project, I definitely bit off way more than I could have chewed on that car. So, I mean, it was, to give you an example, what I should have done, looking in hindsight, is I should have got that thing home, replaced the part that was broken on that vehicle from Glenn's Rally, and just continue to drive it. But I have not ever been accused of being a smart man. So that's not what I did. So what I did is I went out and I started taking everything out of the car. Because why the hell wouldn't I just take everything out of the car? Still having fireworks out there, as you can hear. If I'm going to do a transmission swap, I might as well do a motor swap. So let me go out and do that. So that's what I began working on doing. So I took everything out of the car. That part went pretty well. Like, there was not a pain in the ass to get anything out of that car. It was well built, well engineered, and it was easy enough to just kind of remove everything from the car and be done with it. So I took it all out and put it in the shed, and that was kind of the end of that. And after it all went to the shed, I went out and I bought myself a Nissan V6 from the Mad Russian. So it was a VG33E, sorry about the loud noise, but I'm just test fitting the rear heat extractor, just making sure they kind of line up and don't look too goofy. And I think that's about as good as we're going to get. So bought that, bought a Nissan transmission, which I still have. If anyone wants a Nissan transmission from a 300Z, I got one laying outside. Actually, I wonder if someone just come by and steal it. I told the guy, that's still there. Some guy was interested in coming and getting it, and one of those Facebook marketplace things of like, well, I want it, can I come get it? Well, I can't come today, can I come tomorrow? Can you just leave it outside? Can I come by and grab it? Blah, blah. So I got the transmission, it's sitting outside, and I told a random guy on Facebook where to come find it. But if you want it, and you live close to Baltimore, Maryland, feel free to send me a message on Twitter, at Untitled Car Show, and I will get you the information you need to get it from me. And you know what, if you get it from me on the show, I will give it to you at no charge. Just come pick the damn thing up. It supposedly works. Anyway. So I bought the Nissan engine transmission, started wiring it up, started putting it in the car, found out, oh, this is from a front-wheel drive Nissan. The block is the same, but it doesn't quite line up the way it's supposed to when it comes to the cooling and all that stuff. And I could have gone out and bought a bunch of parts and equipment to fix that, but I decided it would be easier just to go out and buy something a little bit simpler. So, of course, I went in and bought a more complex motor from a Audi 5000 off of Speedy Cop. I didn't know it was Speedy Cop at the time. This was one of those, again, random things where buying stuff on Craigslist, you just find yourself at Lemons Racers headquarters. So, bought the motor off of him, got it to the house, got it into the car, and the ECU I had with it just was not working, and it ended up being, I was going to have to redo all the wiring in the harness, is what it came down to, as far as I could tell. Because nothing was grounding, nothing was injecting the way it was supposed to. The
the electric throttle, or not throttle injection. So it's this mechanically controlled electronic fuel injection. So like there is a sensor that's mechanical that measures the airflow. Like if you picture it like a plunger on a toilet, like instead of water flowing through the plunger to try and get down, it's kind of trying to flow up, and it pushes past the plunger, pushes the plunger up a certain distance, and that's what controls how much air gets into the system. And it was turbocharged, and it had these funky injectors, and it was just a giant pain in the ass. So I decided I would kind of ditch that part of the project and go out and find something even simpler than that. And this time I actually went out and got something simpler. I went out and bought a inline six Chevy 250 from a old Chevy Nova. And it was a absolutely wonderful engine. It was three wires installed, got it running. Went out and bought a couple of Saginaw and Muncie transmissions because they were super cheap. Threw one up in behind it, had the clutch and all that stuff for it, and it worked and it spinned. So then I had to modify the drivetrain to get the drivetrain to work with the, you know, like get the drive axle, I guess is what I'm looking to say, to work with the rear differential. And that was a bit of a pain in the ass, but I was able to get that done. And so I got that lined up, got that installed. So good to go so far, right? Well, no. So I had to cut out bits of the floor to get the shifter to come through the floor. I had to modify the engine mounts to get them to work with the Chevy Straight Six, which, of course, this is, you know, simple stuff. The issues I was starting to run into, though, was like cross-member clearance and getting the brakes to work, and a lot of the stuff was my own undoing. So what I should have done is I should have taken apart the car and just taken the engine out, left everything else in the car until I figured out what the hell I was going to do, and then get around to working on those things after the motor was in and working. But I'm not a smart man. Again, never been accused of that. So I got the motor in, running. I could start the car, get it moving, and then it would, you know, had no clutch really because I was having issues getting the clutch to work with the way I wanted it to work. You know, it was mechanical clutch. It was literally just a wire. It was from the Porsche 924, so it was just pure mechanical wire to the fork that pulled on it, but I had to find a way to mount that the way it was supposed to go in, which that was a pain in the ass. And then I was having issues getting the brakes to work the way they should have worked because I took out the rear brakes, the drums, with the intention of putting in a parking rear disc brake system from the 924, but then that ended up being not happening. So then it became a matter of, well, I got the driveline in, it'll turn the axle, which will turn the rear differential. The clutch isn't working the way the clutch is supposed to work. The cooling system, it was simple, but it was prone to air bubbles in it. So I really didn't want to push that. So I kept the car mostly, you know, stationary. Well, part of that's because it had no fucking brakes. So, you know, just on blocks back and forth. It was just like, yeah, the motor was there, the transmission was there, the clutch was mostly good. It was just giving me a little bit of issues. The not even the clutch was giving issues. It was just like every day going out and trying to do, like, so for those of you who don't know, like, I work a day job which pays the bills. My wife is a nurse practitioner, or is becoming a nurse practitioner, so she's going to school. So she's got a hectic, you know, schedule. So I went from being able to work on the car for, you know, few hours a week to, it really became about an hour of free time a week to be able to work on stuff. So because of that, it became hard to be consistent with working on the roller. So every time there was a setback and it was a new thing I had to do or fab or whatnot, it just became overwhelming. And for my own personal sanity and for sanity of my wife, it was just, I need to get rid of that project and I need to get something simpler. And now a lot of you are going, well, how the hell is a Pontiac Fiero simpler than a old, you know, super reliable Volvo? And the simplest answer to that is because I fucked up the Volvo. So me messing with all the stuff really killed that car. And I feel a great sadness talking about it because it is painful to me to think about how I basically killed that car. And it could have been still out there running and driving today. It was a good car when I bought it, and I took it and turned it into scrap metal. Hold on 1 second. So that's kind of, I mean, I took a good car, killed it, and I feel real bad about it. And there's nothing I can do about that fact. You know, that's just kind of something I live with. And, you know, I don't know if you've heard my silly rant about cars before, but, you know, cars take oxygen and fuel and turn it into energy, you know, movement and carbon monoxide or dioxide and a whole bunch of other stuff. And life takes fuel and, you know, oxygen and turns it into movement and energy. So there is something I feel is like cosmically wrong about breaking a car. Now, I'm not saying it's as bad as taking a life by no stretch of the imagination, but it's always been something that, like, I have a connection with automobiles. Even back to when I was a real young kid, I remember the first van, like, which is the first vehicle I really remember ever being sold, was a white Chevy van 20. Called it KB because it was the first two digits of the license plates. And this is before I had really any interest in automobiles that I can recollect. It was a family conversion van. So it had, you know, the big old bed in the back and the, you know, four captain seats, you know, the two in the front and two in the middle. And I remember being at the dealership. I remember too, it had a little table you can move around. There's two pegs in the floor. And they were probably about like 4 inches circular. And like you plug this little table into it. And I remember it sat right over the axle. And the way I knew it sat right over the axle is I remember being in the car and the, I don't know exactly how it happened, but the little puck it sat in fell through and out of the bottom of the car. And I think, I don't remember how the like metal part of the table didn't come down and mess up the drive axle, but you know, it didn't. But for the remainder of the life of that vehicle, there was just this little hole in the middle of the car where you could look down and you could see the axle and you could see the road, which was really fun and safe having, you know, three small kids in the car. So I remember when my parents took that in and traded it in for a newer Ford van, because that's what all the cool parents do, go from van to van. Actually, I really like vans and I really like those vans, but I remember crying. Like, I don't remember much about the whole exchange, but I remember my parents told us to go in and, you know, say goodbye to the car, say goodbye to the vehicle. And I remember being latched onto it. Like, the passenger side had like this double door, and like, I remember like I had like a death grip on the vehicle, and I didn't want to let go because I was like, I love this vehicle. You know, it's taken us a lot of places, and I don't understand why we have to get rid of it. You know, probably 6-7 years old at this point. And then the next van we kept for a long time because that only got sold. But that was probably, we bought it in like 95, 96, maybe 97 at the latest. Probably closer to 95. Yeah, because I was young. Maybe even older than that. Maybe it might have been 92, 93. Yeah, probably 90, 93. I know this is really compelling. Anyway, so like 93 to 95. And that thing only was, it got, my dad sold it in the cash for clunkers scheme, which, fine. I mean, I could have used a van back then, you know, early 20s, no good paying job. Would have been a fine place to live. But yeah, no, it got sold, had all sorts of mechanical issues with it at that point, but not even mechanical issues, it was more just electrical bullshit was going wrong with it. It was a good van, and like a lot of people I know disparage the van, and a quick aside on all this, if you need a work truck, or you need a vehicle that's a pickup truck, and pickup truck prices are too crazy high for you, I highly recommend go out and buy yourself a conversion van or a non-converted van, because you can get them for super cheap compared to a pickup truck, and it's 90% of pickup truck. As a matter of fact, I would say it's better because it has an enclosed cargo space automatically, but it's typically the same frame, it's the same motor, a lot of the same parts, like the old E250s, or I know the new ones, the new Ford Sprinter vans, or not Sprinter vans, what the hell they call them, the Ford Transits, slightly different in terms of that, but, you know, the older ones, I mean, used pickup truck prices are crazy, and used van prices are in the dumps, so if you want a cheap truck, go get a van, but anyway, so, I mean, I've always had this connection with vehicles, and, when it came to the last day I saw the Volvo, like, I couldn't be there when it went away, because I felt too bad. If I would have saw it got up on that wrecker, I would have stopped the guy. So, it's something I feel is cosmically bad, and something I have to, I feel like there's an irrational part of my brain that's like, I don't know, not sad, but like feels the need to make up for the loss to the automotive world by doing other great works. So, you know, fixing up something that would have not been kept on the road, which is why I got the Fiero, because I know, the guy told me when I went and looked at it, you know, no one buys it. It's gonna have to go, you know, to scrapyard to give me $400 for it. It's on sale for $400. I don't want to crush it, but you know, I'm going to. And I think that's a lot of car guys. They don't want to see something disappear from the road, but you know, there are large immobile objects when they don't work, and that's an issue. So There's that aspect of it, and that's kind of the, you know, go into even more detail about the car and what exactly was wrong with it. All that. But the general gist of it was, like, I can't continue to do the podcast and the day job and try and do videos on this and try and, you know, continue to get guests and booking them, because the podcast takes up a very large portion of my time, which I have been neglectful of recently because other stuff in my life has been, you know, pressing on that. So, you know, it's the joys of adulting, as they say. So, I don't know, it's one of those things where I miss that car a lot. I think about it a lot more than I should. I do think
it saved my lives on my life on a couple of occasions, especially in the Lemons Valley. You know, I think it was a great car. It started to have mechanical issues. You know, a lot of miles on a motor. Can't even tell you how many were on it, but it was either around 250,000 or around 500,000, because that's where that part that went wrong with it. It's something to do with the distributor cam O-ring, something like that was what was wrong with it. You know, it was just getting a ton of sludge buildup in it, which is why I thought an engine swap was rational. Well, it would have been if I wasn't me. So I miss it. So don't think that I don't miss it. That being said, I do think the Fiero project is a better project for the channel and a better project for my lifestyle right now. So it's something I could come out and, like earlier today, I came out and I just fixed a hood latch, and that took probably about an hour. I was able to get it done and feel good about it. And then probably sometime, you know, maybe this week when I get a little bit of free time, I'll come out and I'll fix the hood latch release on the inside of the car that the previous owner destroyed for God knows what reason. And that'll, you know, it'll be maybe a 20-minute job, maybe an hour job, but it'll be something that will be fixed, and I don't have to worry about there being another issue. Excuse me. And if there is another issue, it's something where I can go online, pull up a form, and go, here's how you fix this, here's someone else who has a similar issue. There's enough of these cars that problem will be solved, and a part will be available, if not at the Advanced Auto Parts, then at a junkyard. And that's kind of, you know, I guess where I can end that. You know, it's, you know, I feel bad. It was a good car, and I ruined it, and I fully admit that. And, you know, it taught me a lot about modifying cars and about my own limits and all that, and for that I'm thankful. For all the fun times I had with it, I'm thankful. Again, it sounds like I'm like, well, you know, the relationship, you know what, it feels like almost like I had a divorce from it. That's what it feels like. Nah, maybe not that. A bad or a good breakup. There we go. Like a good relationship breakup. Because I'm like, I understand. I learned a lot from you. I realized a lot of it was my own fault. But I've grown a lot as a person because of the experience I had because of that car. So that's kind of where I'm at with that thing. So I'm on to my new boo, the Fiero. You know what's a good sign when the bookmarks start changing and you get yourself, you know, looking at all the YouTube stuff for it and like all the fun, like, oh boy, I can do this, that, and the other, and what's the aftermarket like for this car? So that's where I'm at. I think it's a good, I thought it was just the time to move on. I was just hurting myself by keeping doing what I was doing. So there's that. Yeah, I think that's going to be the end of this episode. I know it's a little shorter than normal, but I'm going to try and put out a few episodes this week, make up for the lack of episodes over the last few weeks. So we'll be back to a normal regular schedule soon enough. I know I said that on the, not last episode, but the episode before that. But you got to deal with, I got to deal with the crazy. I think I figured out how to work around all the time constraints I've had recently. Work schedule stuff, home stuff, you know, kid stuff and all that. And It's stressful, but to kind of borrow something I've learned talking to all these people I've talked to and interviewed, it's something where, sorry if that made a loud noise, but I just had something flying in my ear. You have to work at it. Like, you, if this was easy, if this was something where anyone could sit down and they could do it and they could make a living at it, then that's what everyone would do. And, you know, a lot of that comes down to, you know, doing it for free for a while, working in obscurity for a while, until you get the recognition you deserve. And sometimes the recognition you deserve is, you know, for me, a couple thousand people maybe, you know, who listen to this show on a regular basis, you know, or it's the three people who watch a YouTube episode I make, or, you know, the, God, what, basically 14,000 people who follow me on Twitter. What, never understand that one. But, you know, those numbers aren't enough to pay the bills. Which actually, since I'm sitting here thinking about it, it's something I was listening to Rob Kibbe talk about on his program recently, where he was talking about doing the Patreon thing and how it's worked for him, and they don't have to do ad reads anymore. And, you know, Matt Farah's moving towards the Super Chat thing, and that's how he's doing his. All right, that's not how he's making the bulk of his money, but he's making a decent chunk of change from that money. And I'm sitting here going, I want to do the same thing. I want to try and monetize this program in some way. And I don't know if that's going to be a Patreon thing. I don't know if that's going to be a Super Chat type thing. I think more likely not a Super Chat, just sitting here thinking about it, just because, like, with my schedule being what it is, making time to do that. But again, money come in, this becomes a monetizable sort of thing. I don't need it to pay the bills, but, you know, a couple bucks here and there might be worth it to, you know, for the family to kind of chop out some time to let me do the program on a specific day at a specific time, most weeks and all that, so that we can do the Super Chat thing. So we'll see. So maybe that's where I'll start with it, because I think I could work out a time, but it's also, when is everyone available for that? When does it make sense to do that? And that's just it. And so I'm thinking I'm going to do a Patreon. I really don't want to, though. So, but I need to figure out a monetizable way. So if you got any ideas, let me know. That's kind of where I'm at with it at the moment. Life is hard. But it's fun. If it was easy, everyone would do it, like I said. So, you know, thanks everyone for listening to me ramble for a bit. I hope you're kind of enjoying these kind of midweek episodes, these kind of more solo episodes. So I know they're solo, we're used to guests, so to make up for that, I'll put out more of me talking about myself than in a typical week. So we will be back to guest interviews soon. It's just one of those things of, should have been an interview this morning. I was talking with a gentleman. I've tried to do this thing 3 times now, and each time it's fallen through. I would say 1 was on me, 2 was on him. Involved time frames and United Kingdom and all that. And it's just one, like, I appreciate him trying to come on the show and his manager talking with me. But it's, you know, I'm not a morning person, so it's hard to do that sort of stuff and coordinate with the UK. So that was a pain. Other than that, though, I hope I can work it out with him, and maybe if you're hearing this, by the time you're hearing this, the interview will have taken place. So, other than that, we'll be back to kind of regularly scheduled program, hopefully. I'm not going to make promises until we kind of get back on track with the schedule, but until then, you know, I'm still thinking of you all. I still love you all. I want to thank you all so much for listening and kind of putting up with the recent hectic schedule. If you like what you hear, make sure you tell a friend, loved one, coworker, you know, whatever you can do to spread the word. That's the best way to help out the show. It really is. So thanks everyone so much for listening. Have a good night. Have a good evening. Whatever you are, whatever time it is there, you know, thank you so much for listening. Please be safe out there.